Okay, so yeah, we're here at Gen Con 2010. We're with Mike Morales and Rich Baker of Wizards of the Coast. Thanks for coming today, guys.
Thanks for having us. Welcome to beer.
Dark Sun just came out, or it's available at the show in some fashion at least. Have you heard any kind of reactions to it so far, like with the updated setting, with any of the new rules, any of that?
You know, so far I think the reactions are pretty positive. I think even kind of more than we anticipated, have really been excited about Dark Sun coming back after, being gone for, almost 13, 14 years. There's a lot of people who remember the old setting very fondly, and I think they're really just kind of stoked to get their hands on a new version of it. I think it's, I've seen a lot of enthusiasm, and it's really pretty encouraging to, to see that sort of reaction to something you worked pretty hard on.
Yeah. So how many people, are really excited and they sit down and their characters get, brutally torn apart by the deserts?
It
hasn't changed their mind at all?
I haven't had a chance to see a lot of table play here at the show, at least as far as, the Dark Sun events yet, but I hope to a little later on.
Maybe kill some characters yourself.
Yeah. Well, they had a comment.
What were some of the challenges in kind of updating, it's not even going from third to fourth, you sort of had to go from second to fourth, and, there were things that probably were more of a challenge, like what do you do with a merchant class, that kind of thing?
Sure. There's kind of two aspects to the update. One is certainly a strictly mechanical aspect, the other is the story update. In terms of the mechanics, we actually found when we started really kind of examining it closely, that the 4th edition game engine let us kind of patch up a lot of ugly old pudgy bits that we never really liked much before. As for example, 2nd edition Dark Sun kind of went out of its way to create a Templar class that had access to cleric healing powers, because if you played elemental clerics, you could very easily select yourself away from healing abilities. Well, it's not that clerics are only about healing, but you certainly need to make sure that capability is somewhere in the party. And if you built yourself an elemental cleric of fire or earth, you didn't really have anywhere near the sorts of healing capacity that you were sort of expected to have to fill that job in the party. So the Templar was a guy who was the guy who just had the old cleric spells through this awful story kludge of the Sorcerer Kings control these elemental vortexes, and through that elemental vortex you can get access to all the normal cleric spells even though no other cleric gets them. As it turns out, in 4th edition we've kind of refined our understanding of what the roles of the different classes are. We say it's not really important that you have a cleric in your party, it's important that you have a leader, a healer, a guy who can give you hit points back in the middle of the fight. Well, what other ways can you do that? Well, in 4th edition you've certainly got the psionic leader, which is the Ardent. You've got the martial leader, which is the warlord. You've got the primal leader, the shaman. You have several different ways to make sure that role is covered in the party. So we were able to take a step back and say, this works better. We can just say, what the setting was kind of implying from the get-go, which is there is no normal divine power source here. That was sort of hiding and implicit in the setting before. And we could actually embrace that fully, let that be a bigger part of the story, and trust that the roles that we had developed before you were going to help us cover that job in the party with answers that were kind of more appropriate for Addis. Long answer, sorry.
Yeah, I'm okay with long answers. And now you can do things like have the bard, which is an arcane leader.
Right.
You can also defile, which I actually think is kind of cool. I'm going to, suck some of your life out, throw it at the bad guy, and then heal you a bit, consolation prize.
With the introduction of themes, I've sort of read through the book and looked at it. Did you leave themes open that any class can take any theme for a specific reason, or what was the thinking behind making a theme sort of more an open decision?
Basically, we did decide, we looked at the idea of should some themes be closed to some people. For example, like the Veiled Alliance theme, we looked at it as do we really want to try and say this is really for wizards only? But we thought about it and realized that no, we we can imagine in some ways it's a little bit like multiclassing, right? That imagine that there's a rogue out there who rolls in the Veiled Alliance, he trains with them, he's kind of their, one of their secret spies or protectors. It's not crazy to imagine that that guy might pick up a little bit of magic along the way. So why tell him you can't actually take the Veiled Alliance, you know, the Veiled Alliance scene, right? It just, it felt like we wanted to try and keep that concept as wide open as possible. Certainly, most of the concepts are ones you can imagine almost anybody doing. Like, for example, Doom Trader or Gladiator, right? Almost anybody can wind up in those situations, making that their profession. I mean, yeah, you wouldn't expect to see a lot of wizard gladiators, but there's an interesting story to tell if you wind up as, well, I started off as an arena slave. I survived. I got out. I went and pursued my arcane calling, and I became a wizard. But it's always in the back of my head that I used to fight in the arena, and, you know, I might just pull out a blade and gack you if you get too close, right? That we think in the future, if you followed really along enough, there might be themes we would presumably want to narrow down a bit. Like, I could imagine a theme that was for a specific character race, because, you know, nobody makes elven wind singers are so rare that they would only be elves, whatever that might be. I have no idea. But for Darkseid, we were okay with the idea of, you know, anybody could take any of these themes.
That ties into my next question. Do you guys see themes as something that's going to go beyond Darkseid now? Because almost instantly when we heard of it, everybody that I know was talking about themes outside of Darkseid. The biggest one being...
Yeah, let's be honest. Someone has a pirate theme out there. Like, someone's already built
people
that.
Want pirate.
It's funny you mentioned pirate. That's actually one of the examples we kept throwing around. We were talking about what things could be themes.
Yeah. Swashbuckler also comes up quite a bit.
The nice thing about the themes is that it's very portable. The key would just be, like, you know, when we did the Dark Sun, what we really wanted to do was start by making a Dark Sun variable. And then if we were to take the mechanic, like any mechanic we take, the setting, and then move to a standard deal, we'd want to make sure it has the correct place, it has the correct power level. Because there are some, you know, we need to talk about what the theme you're doing, like what role does it play compared to a character class, to a race, to a background. So really conceptually it'd be about just boiling it down to like what load does this carry in terms of the character to make sure things aren't colliding with each other. That's always the danger in an exceptions-based game, like what D&D has embraced, is you don't want three or four ways to get the same thing, where conceptually these occupy different spaces in the system, but story-wise they're all doing the same thing. So then, how does a player actually define if I want to be a pirate by taking a pirate class, a pirate team, a pirate background? How does that all work together? So if we're going to put themes in the core, we have to find out some. We'd have to look at that and make sure that we're clear about what load they're going to carry.
Is there any kind of balance issue that you have to look at too? Like if themes suddenly become available to more characters, say, you know, oh, you've got an extra encounter power. Is there a worry that's going to skew anything?
Yeah, we set the themes up so that essentially the bonus power you get is on the low end of an encounter power, right? It's sort of an at-will and a half is the way we kind of thought of it. Some of them, you know, merge a little bit higher, some a little bit lower. But we looked at it and in terms of, like, damage output per round over the course of the fight using your encounter powers, your dailies, or at-wills, it makes you about half an at-will better to have a theme. And we said, we're not anxious about that really calling the game off.
Yeah. The key would be just to make sure we don't keep adding elements like that going forward.
Yeah.
So it does occupy space where if we wanted to put that. Because in Dark Sun, there's this kind of acknowledgement sort of back when Dark Sun was first printed. Dark Sun characters are a little tougher.
Roll 5d4 for stats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, things like that. So it's just a matter of making sure that if we put it into core D&D, that we're fine with saying if we do something that makes the characters a little bit stronger, we're not going to regret that 2 years from now when we wish we could have done something else that might make the character a little stronger. We don't want an additive effect to come in where if you use the wrong sequence of books, all of your characters are like 2 levels higher than they are.
Right. So, which is kind of the kit effect in 2nd edition.
Exactly. Yeah. Like sort of kit arms.
And then skills and powers on top of that, and yada, yada, yada.
Talking more about Dark Sun, what would you guys say are some of the things that if someone isn't planning on running a Dark Sun game that they would like to take for their own games out of Dark Sun?
Certainly all the Dark Sun monsters, I think, are a fine addition to any game. You know, the creature catalog is full of 100-odd, you know, pretty cool monsters. I think that was always one of the most distinctive parts of the setting. And you know, there's no reason that a silkworm wouldn't work just as good as a jungle predator in Eberron, you know, and as a desert predator in Athens. And it just has, you know, a pretty similar feel, and you know, the mechanics are completely transparent. Beyond the monsters, which is kind of the obvious answer, you could presumably port the themes over into a campaign with, if you have the right mix. I mean, a Dune Trader's not that far off from
some other,
you know,
kind of merchant.
Any kind of trader, really. And there are a couple of things that are a little bit desert specific, I mean, but if you can kind of, you know, think about a little bit of judicious renaming of powers, you know, or working with the concept a little bit, yeah, I think that's pretty portable too.
So, let's change gears a little bit now and talk about essentials for a bit.
Yeah.
So that's coming pretty soon, right?
Yeah, next month.
Yeah, I've seen some one or two floating around. So I guess our audience, like, they're reading us, they probably already know D&D pretty well. So for us existing players, maybe we've been running a campaign for a while, you know, how much is there in it that they should really be checking out?
Yeah, so basically, if you're already playing D&D, the Rules Compendium is obviously a good first place to look. It has, you know, the latest rules updates will incorporate core rules. There are some rules we've modified a bit for playability, streamlined things where we could, but nothing major, no major overhauls. Nothing that's really changed on your character sheet. With two players' essentials books, first one's coming out in September. Sort of a companion to the Red Box. Well, the Red Box is strictly for beginners. So, you know, it's the nostalgia factor, you know, plays a role if you're existing unit. But one of the things you do with the class design is a lot of the powers you find in there that are for the new builds of Wizard, Cleric, Fighter, and Rogue. Like, if you're playing a Cleric now, you can use any of the Cleric powers. Same for a Wizard. So there's a lot of options in there for existing players. The Fighter and the Rogue, not as much, but I know all the utility powers you can use back and forth. And we're even actually talking about, in the short term, in Dragon Magazine, maybe doing a few articles talking about if you're playing an existing fighter, Player 7-1, and you want to pick up Power Strike from Essentials, we'll make maybe add a mechanic or a feat or something that lets you gain access to it, or clarify if you want to do that. Yeah, that's still in process there. We're not, we'll kind of maybe see how people react to it, and how people are using Essentials in existing games versus new games, and figure out from there.
So with those players' option books, they don't need to pick up the Red Box first in order to no foundational
right,
stuff
yeah.
that they would need.
Yeah, okay. for the players' essentials book, and I always forget to look at the title. It's changed a couple times. Here's the Fallen Lands. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. I always feel like they get that wrong, and everyone's looking for the wrong book. So if you are you don't need the Red Box to play. So yeah, the Red Box is aimed at beginning players. I think it's a really cool bar grill, like the counters and the mats and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need that to play, to use the player's essentials.
So if you're like a poster map junkie too, that would also be a good one to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some physical components in the Red Box that, may or may not be worth investigating if you're already an experienced player. Like I said, the poster maps, the adventure, the character tokens, the monster tokens, stuff like that. Plus, I seem to recall the Red Box is a pretty good value, too. I mean, it's,
it looked like it was $20, which
is... Yeah, right. Yeah. So that might be worth it just in and of itself. And if you're a DM who expects to introduce new players to the game, it's got a great teaching tool in that you actually generate your first character with a sort of play-along adventure where you're sort of creating your character a bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much different character generation experience than we've offered before in these sorts of products.
It's kind of like choose your own adventure style, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. And so we think it's something that if you're trying to find a way to help, you know, ease a friend or into the game, a new player, it really is a good piece of tech. At least we think so.
Would it support maybe kind of smaller games? Like if you just want to do like a one-on-one game with somebody, you know, because I know there's a lot of people who like to do like one-on-one games with their spouse, that kind of thing, or like, you know, you only have like two people over or something like that. Do you think it's a good tool for that, like beyond regular D&D? Or?
With Red Box?
Yeah.
It's not built specifically for that, because when you build your character, that's meant to be, you're doing that by yourself, reading through the book. It's no different than standard D&D as far as group size. Well, I mean, with, I mean, yeah, so basically just the typical thing of playing with a smaller group in the game.
What about Monster Compendium? What can you tell us about that? Or the Encyclopedia?
Monster Revolve?
Yeah,
Monster Revolve. There you go. What can you tell us about that and monsters that are reprinted and updated?
So, the in general, for the Monster Revolve, we kind of tapped into the theme of Essentials, where we wanted it to be very accessible to new players. We also wanted existing players to have a reason also to go out and purchase it. So, in Monster Revolve, there are a number of reprints. I want to say it's about a quarter of the book is reprints of classic monsters. If there's a Manticore, we'll just put the Manticore in the book. We don't want to miss any Manticore. But for creatures like orcs, where there was, you know, the humanoids, and they're more driven by specific flavor, you know, orc archer versus an orc brawler, we in those cases, we included new monsters. Or even in a few cases where monsters may have been presented earlier as templates, we might present here specific monsters instead of just a template with an example. Things like that. So there's plenty in there. If you're, you know, if you already have the monster manual, there's still a lot of new creatures in there. And one of the kind of neat things, one of the things I really like about it is it comes with tokens for all those creatures. So, and it's so nice when you have the layout, you have the stat block, and we'll match the token in the stat block to the token on the sheet. So you can see what R matches to which.
I think also one of the nice things about MonsterBot is obviously it uses our new monster layout. And I don't know if you fellas have had a chance to kind of play around with that or try to run something
there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, I think, a much more useful just physical arrangement of the stat block. It does play very nicely with the DMs.
And especially as far as solos go, can we expect updated dragons?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If we took an existing monster forward, if there are any changes in terms of design philosophy or mechanics, we apply those to them.
Including monster math, that kind of thing, like updated monster damage. Yeah.
And a lot of people are asking for updated red dragons because their Monster Mania 1 dragons are just getting destroyed. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all been updated.
Great.
So now they're even more deadly than they were before. Yeah. is there anything you can tell? I know like the big seminar is still coming, so there's kind of a limited what we can hear about, but there's like a couple books like the Nentir, Veil Gaze is here, and the Heroes of Shadow books. Is there anything?
Nothing yet.
Tell us about those.
Okay.
Our boss really likes being the guy to draw the curtain back on that for Saturday.
Okay.
Not smart for us to try and spoil it for him.
Yeah. But we can expect a number of surprises tomorrow.
I think so.
I can think of one in particular I'm extremely stoked about.
Okay.
I can't wait to talk about it, but I can't yet because Bill would kill me.
Okay. Here's another thing you probably can't talk about, but I'll just throw at you, and then you can just ignore me. Last year, like, the really big buzz was for setting, like, the next setting, you know, because we didn't know what it was going to be. You know, there's a lot of speculation it was going to be Darksome, but we didn't really know what it was. This year, it doesn't seem to have the same kind of, like, fervor people asking online, you know, is there going to be another setting? That would be the sort of thing that would probably be clarified tomorrow, at least?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
You got that?
Yep. Okay, I think that's all we got for now. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Just taking time to talk.